All right, everybody.
It's 10 o'clock. We have a quorum, which is great. Thanks for everybody attending. Like Eleanor said, if you haven't filled out a speaker card and you'd like to speak and you are not the presenter or owner, please do so and turn them in to Eleanor. Today is Wednesday, March 1st of the Central Business District Historic District Landmark Commission meeting. If you can get a roll call, please.
Roll call. Seamus McGuire, present. John Boyd, present. Whitten Payne, present. Nicole DiPietro, absent. Peter Trappolin, present. Matt Norton, absent. Adrian Dixon, absent. Bradley Becknell, present. Dow Edwards, present. We have six members constituting a quorum.
Thank you. And if we can get has everybody on the commission been able to review the minutes from the February 1st meeting? Yes.
Make a motion that the minutes be accepted.
Thank you, Dow. And
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
To approve? Motion passes unanimously. All right, looks like today on the agenda we just have one. No consent agenda items. We do have a landmark nomination of the 1001 Howard Avenue building.
I'll just be reading the statement of significance, the staff recommendation today, since this has been deferred from last month. The Historic District Landmarks Commission evaluates the significance of a structure based on the four criteria as established by Section 84.22 of the City Code, any one of which can make a building eligible for nomination. Plaza Tower was the first high-rise structure in New Orleans, and when it was built, highest in Louisiana. The construction technique used to build such a tall structure on the area's soil would go on to be the template for One Shell Square, built in 1972, as well as subsequent skyscrapers built through the 1970s and 80s. Previous to its construction, the highest a building could be built on New Orleans' soft soil substrate was 33 stories. The building proved that the Brunswick technique developed by Bruins for driving longer pilings using his connector worked. Plaza Tower is wholly unique in New Orleans, an early skyscraper which has become an iconic part of the city's skyline. For its exceptional architecture and construction value, the staff recommends that the building be nominated for study as a landmark. However, as the building is currently for sale, the staff is amenable to the nomination being postponed for 6 months.
Seamus, yes. Just for the record, the gentleman that requested the landmark nomination is present.
Okay.
So you might hear from members.
Fantastic. And we do have three public comments that were submitted.
Online, yes. And those have been entered, forwarded to the commissioners for their review.
Okay. And specific to this, I know last meeting there was the owner's rep had basically asked for some extension and we granted that. Mike Sherman, would you like to go ahead and speak first, or Jess, or should we have Jesse speak first? Who made the nomination?
Let's go with Jesse first, since they requested the nomination.
Sure. Jesse, if you'd like to stand up. And
you can have a seat at the table.
First of all, I would like to thank the commission for hearing our remarks. As you know, I was the longtime chair of the New Orleans Commission for 22 years, and I resigned in September because I sold my property in the Willow Garden District. I was the person who nominated the building for landmark status for a lot of reasons. But when I was on the New Orleans Commission, we nominated a number of buildings along Canal Street that were mid-century modern buildings. And some of the owners were in favor of the nomination, some were not. But we went ahead and nominated because mid-century modern is considered relevant to historic preservation. The structure that we're looking at, the Plaza Towers, as we all know, has been an iconic part of our skyline for a long time. And you heard in the report the recommendation that it be nominated because of the unique construction methods and everything. I'm opposed to postponing it for 6 months for the reason that it's like kicking the ball down the road. The building, the owner's owned the building for a number of years. He owned it during good economic times when interest rates were low, and he could have found a buyer or developer or a co-developer during that time. There was a lot of development that was going on at that time. And it just seems by postponing it 6 months, what are we achieving? The building continues to deteriorate, and the public continues to be endangered. This building has become so much a part. If you look at any skyline picture in New Orleans, you have the Superdome and the Plaza Towers. I mean, those are the two most recognizable buildings in the city of New Orleans. And I think as a mid-century modern building, it deserves our protection. I think that the commission should hear the remarks of the owners of the building, but put serious thought into what they achieve by postponing the nomination. It seems to me there's consensus that the building deserves nomination. It's where, when and where y'all choose to nominate it for study. But as you know, when you do, we nominate a building for study, it's still just nominated. It's not the designated landmark. We go through the study process, and at the end of the study process, the staff could come back and recommend that it not be designated as a landmark, and then it drops from our rolls. But I think that the owners of the buildings are saying that by postponing it, it provides where there's not an extra layer of New Orleans regulatory over the building. I argue that that extra layer is necessary for the protection of the building. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jesse.
I'm a little bit concerned by some of the statements that you made, and it seems as though, am I correct in that some of the concerns of nominating is dependent upon, or some of the consideration for nominating or postponing it is the designation would affect a sale in some manner?
I think the attorney for the owners would probably address that better than I can. But I think, and I don't want to put words into the attorney's mouth, I think their argument is that by us nominating it for landmark study, it makes it more difficult to sell or develop a building because there's an additional layer of regulatory, in New Orleans regulatory. My counter argument to that is, what if it doesn't get sold in 6 months? What if it doesn't get developed in 6 months? And we're right back here 6 months from now having this same meeting, talking about the same building. And I think that's where I come from. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have one follow-up. You mentioned in your remarks that if we grant an extension, that the building would continue to deteriorate over that time. Would make the building stop deteriorating if we...
The HDLC works with code enforcement. Code enforcement has the ultimate authority to enforce building codes. You know, there's been, in my opinion, a certain relaxation of that enforcement. Everybody knows, parts of the Plaza Tower fell on Howard Avenue and Loyal Avenue, and there was a bicyclist that was almost hit by it. The HDLC works with code enforcement, but we do have the right to cite buildings for demolition by neglect. And we work hand in hand. I just think that in my experience with HDLC, when HDLC asks code enforcement to do something, code enforcement is more likely to do it because it's coming from the HDLC. So that's what I was.
And if I can respond to that, actually, you're correct that for years I think that there was some lax oversight with code enforcement. However, code enforcement is under new management, and that is the director of, he's also the deputy CAO with over land use and the HDLC, and we work very hand in hand with code enforcement a lot more now than we used to in the past. And I have been in very, very rigorous conversations with the director, Tom Mulligan, and he is very eager to make sure that code enforcement does enforce their regulations of this building much more than has been done in the past. Just to add to your comments.
And can I ask a procedural question to the staff? If this building is nominated for landmark status, does that then go to City Hall for approval, or is it, once it's reviewed and decided, that's it?
No, it's an HDLC decision, but it can be appealed.
Can be appealed, that's what I'm correct. Saying. It can be yes. appealed for normal to
correct.
City Council.
That's correct.
And then the study process is roughly how long?
that is sort of open-ended. But while it's being studied, it is still under our full control.
So if we have control of it during the study period, then the study period comes back to y'all, and y'all make a decision whether to designate it or to drop the landmark status on it.
Good. I have a question as well, and maybe you won't be able to answer this, but with this designation, does it enable the developer to take advantage of exterior tax credits and restoration or renovation of the building? Do you know if it
I believe that it already is under a national, what is the national landmark status?
Yeah, it's already listed on the National Register of Historic Places, okay. So it's already eligible for tax credits.
So what would this accomplish?
It allows the HDLC to, right now, issue demolition by neglect citations and control any proposed modifications to the building, exterior building.
So if the developer decides to, it changes hands, the developer decides he wants to change the configuration of the building, if it's not nominated, he would just go through the regular city hall process. If it's nominated as a landmark, then it would have to go before ARC and the staff for any modifications of the building, like adding floors, removing the top hat. I call it the hat on the top of the building. Any of that. So it requires whoever buys the building to go to those, our ARC and our staff, for any changes or modifications to the exterior of the building. And we all know we don't control use, so we don't have any control of what the building's used for, but we can control that the building maintain. If you notice in the staff report, they talked about how the curve of the building on this side was designed to mimic the curve of the Mississippi River. I mean, a lot of thought went into it. Sam Roselli, that developed this building, he thought that Howard Avenue would become what Porter Street became. He was just off by about 6 or 8 blocks. You know, so he built this building kind of in the middle of nowhere. But I talked to a very respected commercial real estate agent just last week about this building, and he says the floors on the building are ideal for either hotel, condominiums or apartments, because they have small footprints to them. They're not like vast floors, so they have lots of windows around. And the views from when I was much younger, I've been up in the Hat part because there were condos up there. The views are just fantastic. It's an amazing building. I mean, I've had a lot of my friends say the building's ugly. My argument to that, when the Eiffel Tower was built in Paris, everybody thought it was ugly, and they wanted it torn down, and now it's a symbol of Paris. So this is not really about whether you think the building's ugly or not ugly. Is it deserving of landmark status by the HDLC? Thank you.
Thank you, Jess.
I have a point of clarity. It seemed like there was a discrepancy between what you commented and what Brian said. If your comments indicated that if it's just, if we recommend it for study, that's no different than it is now as far as regulatory hurdles. Brian, I thought, said once it's nominated, it is under full control.
That is true. I'm sorry if I misspoke. Brian is correct.
Okay,
it's once it's nominated, we have full control over the exterior of the building. And then we have full control, or the HDLC has full control, until it comes up for designation as a landmark, and then the final decision is made then. But during that period of nomination, any proposed changes to the exterior of the building would have to go through the HDLC's ARC and the HDLC staff and the HDLC commission for approval.
Yep, just want to clarify.
All good questions. Thanks, Ellen.
Mike Sherman.
State your name and address.
Mike Sherman, Jordan Street, Louisiana 70113, land use consultant for the developer, and my colleague Becca Hurst. The attorneys for the building owner, Steve Dwyer, Nick Dietzner here, they have more to add, and the real estate broker, Glenn Wormser, who recently listed it. We want the whole team here to answer your questions. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Thank you for the additional month to put our argument together. I want you to know Brian and Eleanor and the City Hall staff have been all over this building and very attentive and very helpful in trying to get this into commerce. Please don't do this. The simple question to ask yourselves today, does one more additional regulatory process help or hurt the building getting back into commerce? One more regulatory process slows down the process of getting this building sold and back into commerce. Let me share a few things. Appreciate Mr. LeBlanc's comments. Respectfully, the city is all over this building. Tom Mulligan, the deputy CAO, we met with him in person just a week ago. We have weekly calls with the city. If you're concerned about code enforcement, it's already happening. There's weekly meetings. The demolition by neglect, which Mr. LeBlanc put in the paper, was his reason for wanting this building to be landmarked. That doesn't do anything. Code enforcement is already issuing citations. The developer's spending hundreds of thousands a month. An additional citation does nothing more than what's already being done, because the city and the building owner are already working to safely keep the building mothballed, and there are no additional citations that can be issued that would help get this building into commerce any faster. The building's already under protection by SHPO and the National Park Service, because 100% of the developers are going to use state and federal historic tax credits. So there's no one better than Mr. Chaplin who can share that is a very intense process. He's been through it more than anyone else in the city. I'm sure many others have too. That when this building gets developed, down to the doorknobs are going to be protected. So we already have the regulatory control in place to protect this building through the development process. Working with City Hall, the determination with the developers made to get this building sold into the hands of a different developer that wants this building. This is the first time it's ever been listed. Len Wormser will tell you in a few minutes that there's dozens and dozens of qualified purchasers in addition to the couple that have already been in advanced negotiations. We are very confident. I want you to hear from Mr. Wormser about what's going to happen with this building being sold. We have at any one point a few projects that are of that 50 million plus scale. They're really difficult to do. Financing, construction costs, insurance, this is a challenging time to develop. Not a single developer is willing to close on a building without all their entitlements in place. It doesn't happen. This building has excellent zoning and land use entitlements. So this building can be sold relatively quickly once a purchaser is identified. But what can't happen is an additional regulatory process. If we add an additional regulatory process or uncertainty in a regulatory process, we could delay the sale by more than a year and the development time frame. So if you share our goal that we want to get this building in commerce as fast as possible, and I know that you do, your staff's already engaged. The deputy CAO is personally handling this building. Code enforcement is fully engaged. The National Park Service, the State Historic Preservation Office, have full regulatory control. Mr. LeBlanc said it today. It may get landmarked, it may not get landmarked, it's a study, but the second that study starts, the building's under full control. The second this study starts, we've delayed the development process, probably a year, because you need full plans. Without the HDLC process, you can close on a building and work through SHPO and NPS once you own it. But if you have a land use entitlement, HDLC approval to get, we could have an additional year before we get this building to closing. So I would respectfully ask, please don't do this today. I think your staff has very thoughtfully recommended a 6-month deferral, and that will give us time to let the sale process move forward. We'd ask for a year and allow us to continue working with the City Hall, including Brian and Eleanor and the team, to get this building back into commerce as fast as humanly possible. If it's okay, I'll ask Steve Dwyer to join us next to share a couple additional facts that I think will be helpful to the HDLC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sir, if you'd like to state your name and address, please.
Stephen Dwyer, 300 Friedrichs Avenue in Metairie.
Thank you.
And my friend represents the owner and developer of the building, the owner of the building. I strongly echo everything that Mike just said. Particularly with respect to SHPO and the National Park Service. There was a comment made about controlling changes to the building. This building is not going to change. No one can develop this building without historic tax credits. And this building, doorknobs can hardly change without affecting tax credits. So SHPO is going to control how we develop it. National Park Service is going to control. And this building is not going to change. It's going to be rehabilitated. There's no chance of it changing. There's no chance of the developer coming here and not using historic tax credits. It cannot be funded without historic tax credits. I'm just speaking from my own experience as a real estate lawyer involved in many developments throughout the city over the last 35, 40 years. But what I am here to tell you specifically, though, is that the developer has recently spent over $200,000 in repairing the net that's around the top of that building. He has also engaged a firm dealing with that net and the building to do monthly maintenance checks, and that's under contract. All of that has grown out of a very robust activity by the city through its code enforcement division and working with the developer in trying to maintain this property in a properly mothballed status until it can get sold. I brought Nick Dietzen from my office, who, if you want to hear what's happened with code and what continues to happen, as I said, in a very robust way, Nick has been up to his eyeballs in dealing with the people in City Hall who are, don't have their eyes closed, they're not winking at this, they're actively involved along with the developer in trying to properly mothball this property until it can be sold in a reasonable manner. Nick?
Yeah, that's right. Briefly,
Nick, if you might state your full name.
Nick Dietzen, 1214 Arabella Street. Briefly, I can do this from here, but yeah, like Steve said, code is and remains very active in this building. We've had meeting hearings as recently as November 21 and throughout 2022. So, and again, like I just said, they are the ultimate authority in this case, and they are and remain very active in overseeing this property.
Thank you.
Yeah, our last speaker would be Ms. Lynn Wormser, who is the broker who has listed this property through his company, national company, HREC. I brought with me a couple of the brochures, and let me just try to pass those around so you can kind of see the vibrancy with which this is being marketed.
Thank you.
Can you state your name and address?
My name is Lynn Wormser, 840 Carondelet, New Orleans, Louisiana. Thank you for letting me speak for a second. I agree with what everybody said so far. I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. I've probably been developing hotels now in New Orleans for about 25 years. Over the last five or six, I got divorced and sold all my interest in the hotels, and now simply just a broker. But since that 6 or 7 year period, I've sold about 6,000 hotel rooms in downtown New Orleans, and I used to have about 1,500 hotel rooms developed in the city, you know, in different partners. This process will have a chilling effect on selling buildings, 6 months, a year, whatever it takes, and I think that's not good for the sales process. We have gone out to market in a very smaller, simpler, smarter process, not send it out to the world, but send it to a direct target group of people that do deals over 20 million, developers all over the country, and then widen that range or that, I guess that push, if in fact we don't get the results we had. But we so far have, I would say, over 65 to 70 groups that have executed a confidentiality agreement. I can't divulge the names, but a lot of them are institutional investors, some local folks, and based upon the activity the last couple of weeks, I'd say we have a real good chance to get somebody through this building, visit it, and hopefully put a letter of intent on the building toward the PSA, and then hopefully sell it as soon as possible. Usually it takes 6 months to sell anything like this, and Peter will tell you, because Peter's I've been involved in with Peter on a couple of hotel deals. Sometimes it takes you long because the plans take so long, but you need the entitlements in place. It's absolutely true. I'm more than happy to answer any questions. I can keep talking all day.
When was the building officially listed?
When was the building listed? I'd say it was listed about 4 weeks ago, maybe five, officially. But Joe told me to get started early to put the package together, and it's been a couple of weeks and we've hit it hard on a broad basis.
And this is Joe's first time ever listing it for the record, or has he listed it like publicly in the past or no?
The answer is I don't know.
Okay.
But if he has, that's...
I do know. See, he's never listed it before. He's tried to develop it on his own. He's okay. Absolutely dedicated himself.
Yeah.
Right. And I've worked with Joe on the sale of the Bourbon Orleans recently and the Whitney recently, so... we've been able to transact, you know, on other properties.
Lenny, what's the asking price per square foot?
Well, I'm not supposed to divulge that because it's not in the
price.
Thing, because you have to sign a confidentiality agreement. However, mm-hmm. I'll tell you, Peter, if you kind of look at the numbers in the back, mm-hmm. you'll see it's about 48 a foot, which is very inexpensive. In fact, the building next door, Peter, you know that little, the Archdiocese?
Yeah.
I think it was 90 to 100, but I have to check that, but I think it was pretty close to that. Mm-hmm. It was in the paper, though.
What, and so, if an individual is going for federal and state tax credits, they're basically going to have to restore and preserve the exterior envelope, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
To whatever's needed, that's correct.
Right. So, I guess the question is, so if it's landmarked, it seems that there would be no impediment to an HDLC review and approval because they're following the Park Service guidelines for restoration.
I think I can help there, because that's what you're saying. Question. On two or three occasions, we have seen, one very recently, a SHPO approval, but not an HDLC approval. So that's a current case from 6 months ago. It's happening right now. It's a building on Franklin Street where HDLC SHPO did approve in writing. So sometimes we do get differences of opinion. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger concern here is the entitlement time frame to get to an HDLC approval. There is additional land that comes with it. You know, is it a massing approval? Is it a conceptual approval? Is it a final approval? So our concern here is uncertainty in the time frame to get to that entitlement. And I think there is more certainty among the buyers on what it takes to get through a SHPO and an NPS process. And we do not know who the buyer is going to be at the end of the day and what additional changes they make to the, remember the, there used to be the trailers out there? Those are, right, that area is part of the land that goes with the building. There is other surface area. So there are other aspects that would come before HDLC review if this landmarking process started. I think the study period on average, and maybe HDLC staff can help me, is over a year, right? An average study period?
But that has a lot more to do with workload. I mean, they would, if this was something that was a priority to, you know, get to the landmark designation hearing, that would be something that we could absolutely expedite.
Thank you, Mike. Chair, what did you want to say?
I was just going to say that, you know, this was a very thorough nomination report, so I don't see any additional research or writing that needs to be done. So the landmark designation could happen fairly quickly just based on docketing. And I also just wanted to state that there are times when the SHPO and the HDLC maybe do not see
eye to eye.
But we work very closely with the SHPO, and they typically have the purse strings, so they win the day. But if developers are asking for things that are prohibited, as the case he's speaking about, then it does add sand or grist to the wheels of the process and take longer. So yes, in some instances, if developers are asking for things that they probably shouldn't have even been asking for, it does add time to the process.
Thank you. Is there anything else?
I guess I would ask one question. Obviously, you're biased from where you stand, but is the nomination of this building actually going to delay things or scare buyers off? Or is it just might make a purchase less than what you would want?
I think both. Putting the cloud, I know this may not be a legal term, but cloud on the title, since it's in the process, slows it and stops it. And if you're buying, when I, well, Peter was the architect and Steve was a lawyer, and Julia, when we used to develop hotels, and it was some kind of component such as this, we stayed away from it, and so did most of the people, because at least half the people that are looking at it, or more, are from out of town. New Orleans has become an institutional market. So if you get a group like that bought the Bourbon Orleans Diamond Rock, a big REIT, I mean, they did their due diligence up front, but they would never close on that property unless it was entitled for a hotel. I mean, Peter knows that. And no new hotels in the French Quarter, so that's kind of how it works. So it chills the process, puts it off a year, in my mind, clouds the title, and propagates a buyer to move away, not to buying the property expeditiously, which is what we all want to have done, including this particular.
Kind of sounds like, though, that you're asking us to abdicate our responsibility in doing what we're required to do for the sake of a financial benefit.
Right.
And that kind of concerns me a little bit, that we're going to be put as a tool for personal gain in some respects.
Can I touch on that, Mr.
Chairman? I think that's what I was gearing towards. However, on the flip side, I'm not sure I really see the advantage of us putting things into nomination. Like, I can't see that outweighing the fact that it's beneficial to them. I don't know if anyone else can see why.
And at this point, we're having commissioner discussion.
Correct.
Yeah. So I don't know if anyone has any, you know what I mean? I agree with you. That's what I was leading to. But on the flip side, I'm struggling to find what benefit we truly get without just giving it another 6 months, under the understanding that we would absolutely not want them to come back and be like, oh, can we have another 6 months? Can we have another 6 months? Right. We're still working. We're about this close to closing, which is absolutely going to happen.
Right. But with that, and I understand that I was struggling with that as well. But with that, someone nominated this and brought it to the board's attention for an action, right? And once that process gets started, then it's almost an end around now to hold on, don't do that yet, because we might want to be able to see some financial reward, or it could cost us some money if you do that. So I'm a little bit concerned that we would slow the wheels of our process then in order to accommodate someone else's financial interest in that project. If we're going to take it and look at it from a holistic perspective, away from those pressures,
right.
Then I think that's appropriate. But to maybe to push back and hold back causes me some concern that I'm almost being, as a commissioner, being played.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, except I think with this building in particular, as opposed to any generic house down the street, this is like a citywide importance that we have to weigh against giving someone a financial benefit or giving them some more time to deal with it, right? I mean, this is the most important building in the city that our mayor and our city hall and our staff are actively daily trying to deal with to get this done for the benefit of the city.
Yeah, but I agree with that, but it's owned by owner. Right?
Right,
and there are certain requirements that they're supposed to adhere to at this point in time, and we are saying, well, let's kind of hold off on that kind of stuff so we can move it to someone else who may eventually become a similar type of owner, and we just push kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, I was going to say, initially when this first came up, my I think I was a lone holdout, was because I thought it would enrich someone personally if it was given a designation. So that was my holdout. But having heard fuller, multiple perspectives on this, I tend to agree with Dow, regardless of... And I think I asked before, what was the advantage to the city, either way, if we designate it or we don't? While I understand kind of a broader issue, I think Dow's point is that it's still owned singularly by, or still owned by a person. It's not a municipal building. Certainly, in the broader scheme of, we hope this will happen, if the right developer comes along, that there will be, in some way, some benefit to the city. From where I sit, just with the plans, I don't know that it'll be, there'll be some fiscal benefit, but it won't benefit necessarily the people of New Orleans. I mean, there's some language in here to draw people from Central America and Europe to buy condos. Again, maybe that contributes in some way, but with tax abatement. I just don't know that the communities that I live in and that I work in will see a material benefit for us to delay the designation so that this developer can come in. I would certainly want more. I'll stop there.
Brian, another question for you.
Sure.
If you don't mind me.
No.
Interjecting. And this is kind of back to what people were saying, and Elmer kind of spoke about this a little bit as well, but if we defer for 6 months, owner picks it up, let's say they start the process, by not nominating, by holding the nomination now, and not having the ARC component in there, clearly they have SHPO regulatory and MPS if they wanted to pursue the tax credit. Right. Seemingly that's a no-brainer. But is there a world in which this facade can change? I know if they were pursuing the SHPO and MPS, likely not. But, I mean, I don't know. Some crazy rich person decided to come in and buy it. Could they effectively change the look and feel of the building?
Yeah, I think in that ideal situation where some crazy rich person came in and it didn't need tax credits,
right.
they
could do whatever they want.
Free to do whatever they want. I think that's probably unlikely. Like the developer has said, I think most people are going to take, you know, tax credits to make this building financially viable. And I wanted to speak to these concerns because, you know, the staff completely supports the landmarking of this building. I think our report states that explicitly. It checks all the boxes. And we remain agnostic to the possibility that HDLC jurisdiction would hinder a sale. That may be true, that may not be true. The reason that we as a staff agreed to recommend a 6-month deferral is that we didn't want a city regulatory restriction to have the appearance of restricting a sale, because we feel that the development of this building serves a public good. Yes, obviously it would, you know, be somebody's financial bottom line benefit as well, but this building, this iconic building, is demonstrably a danger to the public in its blighted form. So, you know, it's not just that we want development, but we need this building to be physically healthy. We need for this to not be in a demolition by neglect situation. So we would like for this to be under the jurisdiction of the HDLC. But we do feel like that the applicant has made an interesting case that the nomination of this building could potentially appear to hinder a sale. So it was a compromise position for us to say, okay, we would recommend 6 months to see if sales could go forward, but not in any way, by us saying that, we're not in any way saying that we do not feel that this should be nominated or that this is less than, you know, landmark status, you know, of importance.
Makes sense.
One follow-up to that, though. Okay, say we postpone for 6 months. There is a sale, and then it comes back up for a nomination. What's the position going to be then? Right? I mean, because the entitlements that were secured before the landmark request was put on it would have a buyer saying, wait a minute, the building now, because the nomination is a different position and different requirements are being hung over, I can't do what I originally said I had the funding to be able to do from the beginning. What's to stop that from happening? I mean, I don't know how a postponement, unless she's asking us to not ever consider it again, because if we're just delaying it, I'm not sure what that gets the actual new purchaser in a belief that something isn't going to happen or won't happen. We're kicking it down the road to a point where there's some ambiguity and creates some problems, untenuous problems for someone who purchased the building thinking that he was getting it under one set of circumstances and it turns into something else.
That's a good question, Doc. What do you think,
I don't anticipate that the staff would change our mind about wanting this to be nominated because, like I said, you know, and the staff report fully indicates that it checks all the boxes for something that should be nominated as a landmark.
Peter, what's your? I hate to put you on the spot, but you have the most experience architecturally here, also with, you know, rehabilitating and restoring buildings. What's your kind of your stance?
Well, I see what, you know, Mike's point that there is additional land, that's what I was looking at here, you know, that could be built on in addition to renovating the building. That would also have to go through, any addition to this building would have to go through Park Service and SHPO review and approval as well. You know, as you know, we added on to the World Trade Center.
And that had to all go through SHPO and Park Service, and there were a lot of revisions and comments that had to happen during that process before they approved it. So I think, you know, SHPO and Park Services can be pretty strict about this. There was a proposal to significantly alter the building pre-Katrina, and there was a condo sales trailer on site. They were in the process of marketing it. The building, at that point, the proposal was to significantly alter the building from what it is today. But I do agree, I think that a project like this, most developers would be looking, it's 40% tax credit.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Basically, So it'd be kind of difficult to, turn that down. So I think, I think it's likely going to have pretty strict review and controls if they go the tax credit route. So
I have a few comments to make. I grew up in a Lower Garden district, and the whole concept in the 60s was they're going to tear down our neighborhood. Then we moved from that to, but the developers are very sensitive. This is a Greek Revival column, and it's bringing us an iconic building that'll show that New Orleans is progressive. And besides that, the train station's there, the bus station's there, there's very little, it was light industrial. Let's give it a try. I heard this from adults. Then we moved the clock forward. I watched this building since Mr. Yeager purchased it. People living in it, kicking out windows. My building is on Barone Street. One end of Barone Canal, where I benefited from this administration's, push to do something with Canal Street, push to do something with the CBD. This is an icon of distress. This is a look that people see, and I'm in the tourism industry, and they're like, this derelict building with missing windows and people building little fires in it and the smoke going out the window because they're living in it. The other day, a man removed a bunch of copper pipes. Do I report it? Yes. Do I call the police? Yes. Why? Because I see under this gentleman's ownership, just like the power plant, which he no longer owns, the Sarah Mario Hospital, which he no longer owns, Mercy Hospital, which he no longer owns, the Times-Picayune location, everything that this man is, almost possibly every major eyesore in the city, every signal to keep us down or back is owned by this gentleman. Now, let's say that somebody buys it and we've thrown this designation with it and they start developing it into condos. There's a little clause. They have to have affordable housing. Positive brings a diverse group into this building. Positive brings it into a neighborhood. I can't see designating it, preserving the exterior of a building that so much study was put into to make it seem like it would fit with our culture. And what is our culture? All of that Greek Revival architecture, all of now with the citizens being able to, if it becomes condos, to be able to live in affordable housing in a good location, close to the tourism industry. I can't see how it will hurt this development at all. Not when we've got an owner that allows all these windows that are pushed out, promised in the Times-Picayune we're going to have security there and fencing and all this stuff. It's bull. It's not happening. Delaying this project, I don't see happening by us putting a designation. It just allows us to do what our job is. And our job is to evaluate property and preserve what's in place. That's it.
We did have one additional
Speaker, Mr. Nathan Locke.
Lenny, anything else? I'm sorry.
No, you're okay.
Mr.
Nathan Locke, on behalf of the Preservation Resource Center, 923 Chapatoulas. I wasn't sure I was going to say anything today, and the level of this discourse, passionate remarks from Mr. Boyd, and the intelligent remarks from the staff, Mr. Travelin, have underscored that I really don't need to say much. But I do, in listening to this, want to sort of differentiate between design review by the Local Preservation Commission and a zoning entitlement. And we would encourage whatever the vote, however the vote goes, for the team marketing this to make that distinction clear. Because this building doesn't need to be rezoned in order to become a hotel. It's not in a position where it needs a conditional use, I don't believe. That's a much more onerous process than the ARC review, which should, in fact, be, as Peter was saying, very simpatico with SHPO and HTLC. Sometimes those agencies don't see eye to eye. Sometimes the Park Service and the SHPO don't see eye to eye, I think, more often than the HTLC being the odd one out. But I would just close by saying there are lots of buildings that are in your full control local historic districts right now in the CBD, right? And many of those have been redeveloped quite well with tax credits for hospitality and other uses. So perhaps discussing what a landmark designation would mean in terms of design review above and beyond what's already in place for many of those properties in the CBD would help help you reach a better conclusion. Thanks.
Thank you, Nick.
I'd like to just say one thing before I'm sure we're going to vote on things.
Sure.
And John's comments were very articulate, and I appreciated them. I would just say, alternatively, you know, instead of looking to punish the developer who's causing all these issues, which I completely agree with, or an owner, shouldn't we be trying to get the building out of the hands of this person sooner the better, so that the building can be redeveloped? And however that happens, you know, no one can predict that. Nothing that we're going to do today is going to determine that. But that argument makes me lean more towards getting it out of this current owner's hands the sooner the better. And to me, as of today, giving an extra 6 months, if that just gives it 1% more chance of getting out to someone who's actually going to do something with it, I might want to take that chance.
Thanks, Paul.
If I could just interject, just to clarify, to nominate a building, it requires a motion in 2 seconds.
Is that
just for the record, so everyone's aware.
But is there any public individuals who has not spoken that would like to speak? Can't refer them enough. As far as, yeah, I think where everybody stands. Any other additional?
I would like to hear from the lawyer behind me who had a response to the question.
I appreciate it, Mr. Harris. I wanted to just clarify two things.
Yeah.
There's no financial gain to the developer by delaying it. We want only one thing, which is to get the building in commerce. Mr. Boyd made a couple comments, and I don't want to, for a second, I don't want to stay focused, but Mr. Yeager, if it's a character flaw that he runs to fire, he was the debtor in possession lender on Market Street. He didn't buy the building, it defaulted. He took ownership, he got it into the hands of the upriver developers. On the Plaza Tower, the thing's been vacant for decades and decades. It was bought at a tax sale, the owner couldn't handle it. Mr. Yeager ran to fire. Should he have done that? I don't know. But he did. And he's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. We want to get the building sold, okay? Drive Shack site, the Top Golf site, that was under someone else's hands, a national company, Drive Shack. It's been sold. He doesn't own that anymore. He wasn't part of the original NSA team. The NSA was sitting vacant. They folks came to him because he puts his money up to try to get things back in commerce. It's a character flaw. He runs to fire to try to help. So that's not fair. He's put the junk in commerce, the joy in commerce, all the angels in commerce. He's done great historic restorations. This building, we're trying to get it into new hands so someone can develop this thing. Affordable housing would be a great use. So far, mandatory inclusionary zoning is generated, according to the city, 0 units in the CBD. Hopefully the city works on that. I would love to see a new developer come in with a great plan here. There is only one question for us. What is in the public interest? Getting this building to commerce as fast as humanly possible. If this nomination moves forward today, we are telling you from the broker, from the attorneys working on this, it will absolutely slow it. What is the harm of 6 months of a delay? There is no financial gain to this property owner. What there is to the city is the public benefit of one less regulatory profit. So my last comment. This is from practical experience. I haven't worked in this building in 10 years. We're in a tough place in the city. This building's in a tough place. You have great people like Brian Block and Eleanor and the HTLC staff working really hard. There's not enough of them. The departments, particularly on the 7th floor, understaffed, overwhelmed. It is damn difficult as a developer. You all know this. All of you are in this industry. It is difficult to get anything through this development process in this building. And I'm so excited that Mr. Mulligan has a new working group. We're going to it in a couple of weeks. So from the developer's mind, New Orleans is a high barrier entry market. A lot of people are scared of the city. That's the truth. Your commissioners, some of you who deal in the development process can tell you that. The great staff, there's not enough of them. So is one more regulatory process going to help or hurt? I would offer, we have enough regulatory processes that aren't working in the city. Adding one more will absolutely slow down getting Plaza Tower sold and back into commerce. Please give us 6 months so Mr. Wormser can get us a qualified purchaser and we can keep your staff briefed, we can keep you briefed, and we'll be back here in 6 months. I hope with the purchase agreement in place with the developer that y'all can meet and make an informed choice. There will be no good in 6 months through a nomination process. And the one correction that I think underscored a lot of this that Mr. LeBlanc shared today and in the newspaper, code enforcement is doing their job and actively overseeing this building. The city is not winking or nodding or closing their eyes, so you have active city enforcement right now. Just give us a chance to get this building sold.
Does Mr. Yeager own the port of embarkation as well?
He does not, no sir. The city of New Orleans owns that. It was awarded to a development team. That development team needed someone with heft to come in. After the fact, they asked Mr. Yeager to join the existing development team. He has done that. The city has had responsible for that building. Because they did not have funding for it, they asked if he would provide private security. He provided private security. There's meetings, and that building is up for a loan this summer with HUD, and hopefully we'll see development activity in that, but no, sir, he does not own that building. Mm-hmm.
So we have three public comments in support of
the nomination.
Do they get written? Do we read them into the record, or we just read them privately?
No, they don't get read into the record. No.
Okay.
But they're part of the public record.
But they're part of the public record.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Did anybody else on the commission want to have anything further to say prior to putting this to a vote?
Well, I have something else. My home's a city landmark, and it's got that nice plaque out front. And if anything, when I bought the house 30 years ago, that was a positive for me. It was a positive. It was like, wow, you know? My efforts with this home, which was five apartments, very small one-room apartments, and the preservation of the facade was going to go put more money in my pocket in the long run, but also it would enable me to present a project that would help rebuild my neighborhood. I don't see the negatives of it being designated. I really don't. I think if anything, it's like, wow. You know, what the salesman has told me about it being, you know, Spangenberg architect, et cetera, groundbreaking of this beautiful building. Wow, you know, the city just verified that what I'm being told is true. It's right. A landmark, it's great.
And I think, just to echo that, and Brian made mention of this, they're pro-nomination as well. I think they just want to delay it, you know? They'd like to see that nominated at some point.
I'd like to make a motion to nominate the building for landmark status.
I second.
Just so I'm clear, so you want to make a motion to nominate for landmark status in opposition to what staff's recommendation of deferring for 6 months, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Dow. Thank you, Adrian. We have a motion and a second. Who is in favor of that motion?
Well, no.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's a motion and we need 2 seconds.
2 seconds.
Is there another second?
The second.
So.
Motion 2 seconds still on? Okay.
Yes.
2 seconds.
A motion, 2 seconds, so that is sufficient to place it under the jurisdiction of the HDLC.
Okay.
Any action taken by this commission can be appealed to the City Council in writing within 10 days.
There's no vote?
No, it's a motion in 2 seconds. Thank you.
That's it for that agenda item. Yeah, I thought for whatever reason that was going to be good.
Yeah, that's why I...
No, I know you gave me that heads up in my mind. I was like, okay, that's been got it started. You need to call you. All right, we have ratification of Architectural Review Committee and staff action since the February 1st, 2023 meeting. I can get a motion to approve that ratification.
Motion.
I move we approve it.
And a second?
Okay.
All in favor?
Who seconded?
Whitney. The motion passed unanimously. Are there any HDLC reports or communications in addition?
I did want to just mention that we had a new civil service series created for our plans examiner level of employee. It was recently approved by the city council, and it basically makes the entry pay for the plans examiner series more competitive with local architecture firms.
That's good.
And it also has additional steps to provide opportunities for trained, experienced employees to remain with the city and be bumped up into a new position rather than we've experienced a lot of turnover because people tend to leave after 5 years because the pay stops growing. This series allows for it to continue to allow for the maturation of the plans examiner in the role, as well as longevity and less turnover, which results in better results for the citizens.
That's great.
Great.
Good news.
So the next steps would include, you know, it being approved by the budget committee for those increases, and we're hopeful that that will happen, and our very trained, dedicated staff will be placed in the new positions that will pay them adequately for their role.
Fantastic.
That's great.
All right. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
All in favor.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Very exciting meeting.
Thank you all.
I was kind of curious to see where it left.
I think it's more of a thing.